Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we're talking about cities and new ways to innovate based on data. Anchorage has an open data policy adopted last April. We'll learn what this means and how advocates expect it to affect city performance. Anchorage is hardly alone in this trend. Cities across the United States are looking to improve the way they perform. Some 60% of Americans live in cities, and projections are for that to grow to 70%. In Alaska, this trend is borne out as well, with half the state's population living in or near Anchorage. So it makes sense to make cities work well, and that requires some new thinking. The good news is cities share a lot of the same challenges so they can learn from each other. And as it turns out, Anchorage is in step with this effort to innovate in cities. We are one of about, what will soon be 100 cities getting a boost from Bloomberg Philanthropies, a foundation aimed at helping cities work better using data and technology to make changes. It recently awarded Anchorage $1.5 million to devote to this kind of work. We'll learn all about that and more on today's Hometown Alaska. Our guests from the municipality are Brendan Babb, with the auspicious job title of Chief Innovation Officer. Welcome, Brendan.
Thank you.
And I want to welcome you back to Hometown Alaska, because we actually had you here a couple of years ago related to things like Code for America, Code for Anchorage, civic hacking, hackathons, those kinds of things. So that's in your background and, I guess, in your DNA. So we'll talk more about that. I also want to welcome Meyer Hutchinson, the City Communication Director. Welcome, Meyer.
Thank you. Excited to be here and support Brendan.
Well, glad to have you both here. And I also want to talk to our listeners for a minute. As you hear about what cities are doing to perform better, it may spark an idea in you. And this is a great forum for you to share what you think might make Anchorage a more livable city, or what service you think could be delivered in a different way than it is already delivered, because that's all of what Brendan is looking at. So don't hesitate to give us a call on Hometown Alaska. You can call us at 550-8433. Or if you're statewide, if you're up in the valley and you want to talk to us, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can always take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's get started. Really happy to have you here, partly because data is kind of intimidating and change is upon us all the time. I mean, Americans feel it, Alaskans feel it, budgetary woes, all kinds of changes. And data might help us with that, but not everybody has the same background. So I kind of wanted to start with a couple of basics. What's open data? What's big data? Are they the same thing? And I'm looking at Brendan because I know with your background, and not that you won't know this, Meyer, but
sure.
You've been working with technology and data and tinkering in this space for a long time. So help people who don't live this and breathe this every day.
Sure, I'd love to. So open data is basically data you make available for other people to use. Prime examples are GPS data, which used to be closed and was opened in the Reagan administration, and then weather data. Often we check weather. That comes from NOAA. It's a government agency. And they've made it open and available for people to redisplay it or do different things with it, download it in bulk.
And that's what I want to do, download weather data in bulk. Who might want to do that? I mean, I can, you know, can see the GPS data. It's a tool I can use.
Right.
I guess, I mean, would fishermen, want to download and look more closely?
Economists or people in fisheries might like to see, maybe you're trying to figure out when the best time to go dip netting is, and you want to take a look at the temperatures and maybe the tides and see if you can come up with any trends. Mm-hmm. So having that data allows you to kind of manipulate it and see if there's any patterns that might help you make a suicide run down to the Kenai and fill up your freezer on the optimum day.
Yeah, I do know people who do that.
And then a lot of the data, like GPS data, it's available now, and people can build businesses on top of it. So you have turn-by-turn directions. So the
idea, that again. You lost me there.
So TomTom is a company before we all had Google Maps and GPS and smartphones that you could get turn-by-turn directions. So it's go to this street, turn there.
Yeah. I just came back from traveling, and if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have rented a car in Europe, because they don't do signage like we do signage,
right.
All kinds of things. But with that in hand,
And then cities have been opening up like property and parcel data and various other data. We have, the Muni did a great job opening up our restaurant inspection data, and now that's in Yelp. So that's open data, and it can hit an API, which is just, it's an application programming interface. Yeah. But API is just a way to like, I want to know information about this restaurant, and you can get the rating back. So you can, computers can talk to each other. So now you can see that information in Yelp just on
now
your mobile phone.
That's a couple months old, right?
Yeah. That's been out in, I think, June is when it was launched.
Which I think is a great consumer service. Do you have any data on how it's been used, popularity? Have you had any feedback? And Meyer, you might know. I don't know this. It was not necessarily something you worked on, Brendan.
Yeah, no. The Muni is always innovating. They just brought me in to help focus it more. I don't have data on how many people are using it, but I've anecdotally, which is I feel bad saying, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from. And then big data is data sets that so. People are probably familiar with Excel. You've opened something that might have 1,000 rows. Big data would be something that might have 1,000,000 rows, or you reach the limits of your computer being able to process it, or it has 1,000 different variables. So now these are data sets that you want to deal with usually in the cloud or on a supercomputer, something large enough to handle the data.
Voluminous.
Yeah, a voluminous amount. And like the number of tweets that occur each day is a lot. That would be considered big data. And if you're analyzing all of that to see if there was some kind of trend.
Yeah.
They're kind of fancy names and then they get popular. But big data is just basically a large data set. And often, sometimes it's called something's called big data, but it's you could still do it in Excel
on your laptop.
I was
pretty sure I was misusing the term when I was throwing it around kind of loosely, you know. And it raised questions in my mind, like, well, does having an open data policy in the city mean that we're going to go out and get data and share it, or are we going to look at the data we already have in ways that we've never looked at it before? Because that seems to be what some cities are doing.
Yeah, it means a lot of, basically it'll be data that we already have, that the city already collects and has, and opening that up for residents to use, also for other departments to use, basically for anyone to take a look at the data and see if they can find more useful information or display it in a different way, make an interesting visualization.
Could we talk about what that might be? I mean, could it be when people pay their bills? Or I just don't know what that data would be. What do we already have? What do we collect lots of but haven't actually mined for what's in there?
Well, we're just at the beginning stages of some of that. Other cities have, Chicago's done something with restaurant inspections, and they've added other data. And often big data also means predictive analytics. So they've looked at crime data, temperature data, and seen when people have
hot days, more crimes, or hot days, more eating out.
So you throw all that data together and you try to see when does someone more likely to have a restaurant inspection violation. And so they mined this data and came up with a predictive model that involved crime and heat and dumpsters and all this other stuff. And they were able to find a violation 1 week earlier. So now they give this list that's kind of prioritized. They give it to the same health inspectors and they say, hey, this is what our model says. You can still use the same routes that you, the same order that you are inspecting restaurants, but try this model out. So they go to the ones that are more likely to have a violation. They go there first. They still hit every restaurant, but they found that they've detected them a week earlier.
I see.
And in other cases of big data, you might have information from like a generator or a machine that's working, and you might be able to detect like, hey, there's something, an anomaly here. We should tune up this machine because it's likely to fail. So you're able to predict, but it's called preventative maintenance. So so some of that data we're going to make available. And the great thing about data is it's kind of like the iPhone. You put it out there and you let people build applications, but you don't know that Angry Birds is going to be built or Candy Crush. I'm not up on all my games, but
it's but a moment
you,
in time.
You provide a platform. So basically the city's trying to provide data that's a platform for people to find information they need, redisplay it, for businesses to build stuff on top of it, and because it's open, you don't charge people for that data. Mm-hmm. You just provide it to mm-hmm. them.
You know, before you got here, I was wondering, well, gosh, I wonder if the city is going to have these new partnerships that we don't know. And you said that's likely, but nothing yet, right? That's really happening. But have other cities had interesting partnerships that you could, you know, share with us? I mean, I feel like that public-private is an interesting area.
Well, I mean, to some extent, the restaurant inspections going into Yelp is kind of a public-private partnership.
There you go. Yeah.
And then we're also looking into Waze, W-A-Z-E, which is owned by Google, and it's a way to report if you see a car on the side of the road or report conditions, and it provides you more traffic information to say, like, oh, this lane is closed. And we're interested to see, we schedule road closures at the city. We schedule city road closures, and the state has to file for a permit with us. So we also know state road closures. Can we provide that information in a way that residents can consume that and avoid, like, oh, this road is closed during the summer, or mm-hmm. and take a different route? So
yeah.
Can we provide better information to where people are already looking mm-hmm. so that they can have a better day?
I was just going to mention that I think open data mm-hmm. at its most basic, at its heart, is about giving people more information and hoping that with that more information, people can make more informed decisions, make better decisions, whether that's in the operation of city government or just in their day-to-day lives and how the city mm-hmm. interacts with that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the bigger goal concept that people are aiming towards when they say open data. That could manifest itself with a restaurant inspection and an ability to know that the place you love to go down the street is clean and does a great job where you don't see in the restaurant and the or a place you don't know about that you're mm-hmm. wanting to
you're
check
curious.
Out. You're curious yeah. And you have a little more information to make an informed decision. But also it could be broader things related to, you know, the municipality owns a utility that provides energy to people and water. And there's a whole lot of data that folks accumulate doing those day-to-day jobs, metering, mm-hmm. all those kind of things.
I'm just thinking that the water company has just been putting out information that they're going to have new meters. And I think some cities challenge residents where water use is a real issue, like California's been in a drought. Mm-hmm. It's a way of engaging citizens and letting them know what their use is. And we're probably doing some of this, I think. I feel like my husband pays our utility bills and talks to me about this. And I think this Anchorage is doing some of that. Maybe it's not the city. Maybe it's private.
Yeah, no, I think everyone I've worked with in the Muni has been fantastic, and they're all doing a lot of great stuff. My goal is to help that more available for people to find it. And the evolution of open data, initially people were like, okay, let's just put data sets out. And now there's more of an evolution of, like, what can we build on top of that, or getting feedback from residents on what data they want to see, or what the business community wants, or departments. Mm-hmm. Syracuse has an innovation team, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
And they looked at water mains and water leaks, and because they had old infrastructure, and they did some predictive stuff so they could figure out where things might break, but also respond more quickly when there was a water main break, so that service to the residents. They wouldn't be without water for like 2 days. They would be able to fix it like two or three mm-hmm. within 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So using sensors and data and knowing how old some of the pipes were and just analyzing that stuff.
I just want to tell folks, if you've just joined us and I have that cold that's going around, we're talking about, you know, a new approach in cities to speed up performance, change performance, improve performance using data and innovation and even technology and interface, things like that that make information that the city has more available to people, or it's just all kinds of ideas about that. And Anchorage is in the flood of cities that are moving in this direction. Part of it's probably lower budgetary, you know, tight budgets make people still want to innovate, but you can't just throw a lot of money at it. You can't just throw a lot of people at it. What are some other ways that we could solve this problem? So it's that. And I want to throw our phone numbers out for folks. We have 550-8433 in Anchorage. If you've got questions for Brendan Babb, Anchorage's Chief Innovation Officer, or Meyer Hutchinson, the Communications Director for the city. So that's 550-8433, or shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I actually do have an email. Why don't we go ahead and talk about it?
Can I mention one quick
thing? Oh, sure. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
So Meyer did something that was powerful with data, is he was able to see the most frequently visited Muni web pages and then reorganize the front page with images based on where people were already going, so it's easier for them to find that. So that's just basically using data that we had on what people were looking for.
And when was the last time that homepage had changed? It had probably been a long time.
It had been quite a while. We don't know the last time. And you know, we were somewhat restricted by our monetary constrictions with how much we could afford to spend on it. But just not, you know, we didn't create something totally new, but just rejiggering it to make it a little more user-friendly.
Yes, or staying inside the sandbox,
yeah.
But whatever you could do.
Small thing, but yeah. I think it has been helpful for people visiting.
It is more visual. I definitely noticed it when I went there. So let me read this.
Sure.
So we have an email from Jim Coyne. A question for your panel. Have you been trying out some of the newer Google applications found within the Google Cloud platform? If not, we at Onyx could surely get you started. I'll give you. Okay, maybe he didn't want that read on the air. I don't know. But obviously there's what do you call entrepreneurs out there that are maybe that's why the city hired.
I get a lot of phone calls, yeah.
I bet you do. I wanted to, I don't know if there's any more follow on that. I mean,
well, I would say that we have put a bus schedule data in Google Maps, and I know he's asking more about Google applications, mm-hmm. but we put real-time bus information there, so you can see if a bus is delayed, mm-hmm. just from looking where you're already looking. You're already looking how to get somewhere in Google
mm-hmm.
Maps,
right?
So,
right, which makes me think about something I found on the city's website, and we chatted about it before the show started. It's something called. Help me with it. It's performance
value
results. So, you know, when I was getting ready for the show, I was looking around the city website thinking, I hope I'm not missing something. I hope they're not doing something that I didn't know. So I thought, is this a new initiative? And I my second thought was, who would know where to find it or that it's here or how valuable it might be for them? Because you could find things like dog bites and all kinds of air quality, all kinds of things. Which is interesting, but I would have never thought to go there. So then when we all met here, I started talking about it and learned that it's an old process that the city has had to report to the assembly things like that. Now, I'm just interested in what you might do to change that. Do you have ideas about it?
Yeah, we're going to take a look at some of the existing PVRs. Some are...
What's a PDR?
Sorry, PVR is the abbreviation for the performance value results.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a little jargony, but...
And I think I found it on the left-hand side of the...
It's in the mayor's corner. If you
yeah,
go there,
okay, that was it. It was in the
there.
Mayor's corner, yeah.
Yeah, and some of them are valuable, and other ones could be revisited. And mm-hmm. other cities have kind of dashboards which represent that
that's
information.
That's where I wanted to go with this, was to the idea of a dashboard.
Yeah, I think PVRs, what a great name, performance value results. Who could be against any of those three things?
it doesn't make a picture in my head, though.
No, but I think where that goes towards is actually an open data concept, which is a portal, a page where people can kind of access some of the things Brendan's been talking about and we've all been chatting about here in one place that gives people a chance maybe to evaluate on their own what kind of performance that is, what kind of results
are
there.
What they want to watch.
Or what value is there to them.
What is valuable for them
to
watch.
Yeah, what's valuable to them.
Right.
The school district opened up an open data portal recently, and I know we're very excited and some of us anxious and other ones horrified to have our own very shortly. We're really excited about that.
Let's talk about that. You're going to have a city dashboard.
Yeah, so soon we'll have we'll have an open data portal, Socrata. We're working with them and working with the great Muni IT department to get the data available. And I mean, some of the data is updated nightly, so you'll be able to see new values each day if you want to check it. And then there'll be visualizations, and we'll have, like, one of the data sets is restaurant inspections. You can download the data, mess with it, or there'll be visualizations so you can see the most recent ones, or or how many restaurants are there in each assembly district or each community council district.
Right.
You can slice and dice the data, and it'll evolve to find useful dashboard metrics that people are interested in, and you'll be able to just go to the site and take a look at current data.
So do you, I mean, before we began, you said, oh gosh, we were so excited trying to get it up before this, and it didn't quite happen for, that's the way the world works, but it's coming soon.
Yeah.
So if we're that close, can you tell me what's some of the things that's going to be on it, or will it be the kind of thing that I can build it as a citizen, what I want to see based on some options?
We'll start with some initial data sets, but we'll also have a open data governance committee, and we'll have some people internally, and then external people from outside the city who will make recommendations. And then we'll also ask people to submit ideas they have for what data they'd like to see, and then it'll go to this committee, and they'll help prioritize based on, is it easy for us to get that data out? Like, how good is the data currently, and then just also how people are interested in it. There'll be a couple different
questions
that we ask, and then prioritize them.
Probably other cities have dashboards,
I'm guessing.
Is there a city you'd recommend we take a look at as citizens?
I think Boston does a good job. They have a kind of a daily metric that the mayor looks at, and you can see trends there. But there's tons of cities, Chicago, L.A., New York. Philadelphia is a really good open data city. I'm not sure if I've checked their dashboard recently.
Now, one thing that I'm curious about is would it include things like crime, or does the city already have a place where that sort of thing is put out?
I think we're trying to aim this at kind of some broad topic areas to begin with, not saying that those will be completely flushed out fully right to begin with, but public health, public safety, transportation, finance. I mean, things people are always interested in. Tax data and property tax data, public safety, and crime data does exist at the city through the APD website now, but figuring out how to make that a little more accessible to people. You know, APD does regular
APD
crime reporting for community councils and neighborhoods all the time.
Right. Is that on the city website right now, that sort of thing?
It is.
Yeah, if you go to the APD site, I don't know the URL.
If you go to muni.org and click on the APD shield right there on the front page, you'll be able to get it, take a look at it after
and
that click.
You can choose the location. You can filter by different types of crime. And there's a lot of functionality there, and you can see what's been going on.
I'm imagining another area people would be interested in is economics, like number of jobs in the city, not city jobs so much as, but jobs, opportunities in, you know, how are we doing economically as a city? Is that something that might be on this dashboard? And I don't know how you would quite get it.
Well, we're interested in collaborating with both the state and at the federal level as well. I mean, we're focused on the city. Some of that data lies maybe with the state or maybe, I mean, ASD has their own data. It'd be great to combine
interface,
some of that
perhaps.
Data. Yeah, or set it up so other people could take the data from ASD and then use some Muni data and combine and make visualizations.
Yeah.
So the economic data, I mean, we're looking at a workforce development project. So we've been talking to the state about some of the data they have and how we can analyze it.
That was, we actually haven't mentioned the Bloomberg Philanthropies and the $1.5 million that the city has been awarded for that.
Yeah.
That was, you know, did you compete for that?
We were invited to apply, so you had to already show an initiative for innovation, which luckily Mayor Berkowitz had in terms of hiring me and some of the other innovations.
Brendan Babb competed in a Hunger Games competition, and we prevailed and were able to get
District 12.
Yes.
All right.
So then I had a great bunch of people working with me, and we went through several interviews and submitted stuff, and we were lucky to be one of seven in this latest group, and two of those are outside the U.S., so one of five. There's a total of 20 cities overall over the three different groups that have received this grant.
The cities cities outside the U.S., what are they?
Toronto in Canada, and then
Israel.
There's three in Israel.
Oh, interesting.
Tel Aviv, Bear, I'm going to mispronounce it. So there's two other in Israel.
Okay. So with that, I know I read in the press release that the city is going to focus on healthcare costs in the municipality workforce, basically, and then Mountain View.
Well, the other one is a network. I mean, not network. Neighborhood revitalization.
Okay.
And part of that's with workforce development, where we have a project starting in Mountain View, but will scale across Anchorage.
And just going to start in Mountain View.
Because we're working with some of the state systems, like Alexis, which is a application you use to apply for jobs. Mm-hmm. It could easily scale to the state as well. So, but we're going to focus on Mountain View first, and then apply it to the rest of Anchorage.
So let's talk about. We're going to talk about both of those. Let's talk about the healthcare costs. I mean, healthcare costs are big news, you know.
Yeah.
And so the city's going to tackle its own healthcare costs.
Yeah, because the great thing there is we have data on that, and so. That's something that we have more control over that we can tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, healthcare costs, Alaska has the highest trend in terms of costs going up for the state out of the whole United States. Healthcare costs for the muni are our second biggest budget item. I think they're about 15% of our budget, and it keeps going up. So that is taking money away from us applying to other services and delivering great services to residents. So we'd really like to figure out a way to keep that in check. It's a complicated problem. We're not the first people to try to do this.
Seems like everybody is looking at that.
Yeah.
If you read the newspaper on a random day, there's people that are struggling with it and finding ways to combat is probably the wrong word. But and we're hoping, I think, to collaborate with other folks.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who have come up with some concepts that could potentially achieve some savings. The school district is looking at some of those things in terms of providing kind of an internal health clinic.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a really big opportunity, and we're thankful that there's an organization out there like Bloomberg Philanthropies who is dedicating some resources and connecting other places with us.
Where
people have had some success. That's the hardest thing. You know, Brendan and lots of other folks at the municipality have tons of great ideas, but there's ideas out there that nobody's thought of that are in another place. And
mm-hmm.
even with the connection of the internet these days, it's really helpful to have a convening party like Bloomberg out there who's combing through all of it and saying, hey, this worked in one place and didn't work in another place.
Right.
And I'm happy to steal something that works from some other city. I don't have to come up with any new
ideas.
It
doesn't have to be invented.
I want to use whatever the best ideas are, if that's Anchorage employees' ideas or from some other city, if we can apply.
It's not a new problem. We've been living with it. It's like the heat is going up all
mm-hmm.
the time on healthcare costs. How are you going to go about this? Are you going to connect with other cities? This is not a new problem. And how are we going to go about it?
Well, so one thing that's great from the Bloomberg philanthropy thing is to have money dedicated so that we can focus more on complex problems. So everyone at the Muni does great work. They have a full-time day job. They might have an idea on how to make something better, but they don't have much time, extra time to make that happen. So I have the luxury of getting ideas and collaborating with Bloomberg and other cities and what great ideas people in Anchorage have. And really explore those. Like, we'll be able to use data science to try to get some more data and really see if there's patterns, some behavioral stuff, some human-centered design. Like I just went to the doctor for a physical, like, a month ago, but I hadn't gone in, like, I don't know, maybe 2 years. Like, why did I not go? Like,
mm-hmm.
what
mm-hmm.
are some of those barriers? I mean, so some of the ideas we're looking at are, like Meyer mentioned, in terms of like an in-house clinic, encouraging people to get preventative health care. There's ideas with prescription drugs in terms of giving people reminders that they need to refill it, maybe through a text message or
mm-hmm.
to take the medicine. Just trying to make it as easy as possible for people they want to be healthy, but just kind of remove the barriers and see if there's ways to mm-hmm. make things easier. Also, there's other big companies in Anchorage we would love to work with within the limits of HIPAA privacy. But if we have large data sets there or anything that we learn, we'd love to share with the rest of Anchorage in Alaska. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a problem hitting everyone in Alaska and everyone in the United States. And if someone cracks this, we would love to see if we can apply
that. Yeah, and I mean, have you, I know we've just started this. It's at the beginning, but are you already starting to sort of find out what other cities have done with their healthcare costs?
Yeah, I've started to take a look. Also, the municipality has been looking at it as well before. In internal departments, they've done some analysis and tried to figure out. They have different ideas. There's lots of great ideas.
Yeah.
And I just want to help have a team work with the departments and really kick the tires on some of these ideas and see if they'll scale.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come back and talk about the workforce development idea. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And today we're talking about cities and innovation, partly because Anchorage just was awarded.
We won,
yes. As we said, the Hunger Games. Brandon won the Hunger Games. $1.5 million to sort of use to tackle this. And before we go any farther, I want to say Brendan Babb is here with me. Meyer Hutchinson. Meyer is the communication director for the city of Anchorage. And Brendan is a relatively new job, chief innovation officer. And just before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about one of the things they're going to do with that $1.5 million, which is to tackle the healthcare costs for the city of Anchorage, people who work for the city of Anchorage. And the second thing is sort of looking at a workforce development strategy. I'm going to throw out our numbers just before we get into that. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433, or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's get into that workforce development idea.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So just quickly, it's neighborhood revitalization. So we're going to look at workforce development and affordable housing. In terms of workforce development, the Muni's already been doing a lot of great stuff on that, as well as the health costs as well. And Meyer has some great examples of some of the workforce development stuff that's already going on, and we'd love to extend on that. All these problems are complex, and other people have been working on them.
It's hard to give a soundbite.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to condense workforce development and affordable housing into one paragraph. But we've been focused kind of or paying attention to Mountain View since Mayor Berkowitz got in office. He kind of identified that as a focus area of his administration. And most recently, we've had an AmeriCorps worker in the mayor's office coordinating with the Anchorage Community Land Trust and doing some surveying along with the Department of Labor out in Mountain View and finding out what people's barriers are to employment in that neighborhood. I mean, folks have written about this and folks have covered it on public radio and in the Alaska Dispatch and other outlets. Mountain View has an unemployment rate of close to, I think, 20%.
Which is way different from other areas.
Which is four times as much as some of the other areas, most of the other areas of the city. Why that is, it's so close to downtown. It's a great neighborhood. I don't know if folks get a chance to go out there. There's a lot going on in Mountain View and a lot of people out there trying to do things. And it's really interesting to see that response. I actually was at Credit Union One yesterday with folks from the Department of Labor, and it was amazing to see how many folks were happy to fill out a survey and give some information that is going to help guide the efforts. That's data. That's open data.
Anything come to the top of your brain there that was like, whoa, hadn't thought about that before, and that a citizen just said to you?
I was shocked that almost every person that came through the door offered to fill out a survey. You know, I think at first they thought we might be soliciting them to, you know, sell mm-hmm. a product
sure.
or hawk something. That's probably typical when somebody walks in a bank these days or a credit union. Almost every person, after they heard that folks were volunteering to do this and what the goal of the project was, took the time to fill out the survey. Some of them, English was definitely not their first language. Many of them had marked that they had multiple jobs, which is interesting because of the unemployment. Maybe it's not interesting because they were in a credit union, but it was a great experience. And I think Brendan and the I team are going to...
Yeah, we're excited. We had Code for America is also... We have a fellowship with them for 2017.
That's different from the Bloomberg Philanthropies?
It's different from the Bloomberg Philanthropies, but we're going to try to have them work together.
Work together, okay.
So we'll have two or three people up here for 2017, and they get here, I think, February 20th.
Are these fellows?
These are fellows. They're Code for America fellows, and we got a matching thing from Code for America for $250,000 from, they can't tell me who the philanthropist is, but it's either a Google or a Microsoft. And then we'll provide some money, and with the blessing of the assembly, it still has to go in front of the assembly, but we already have people doing work. We had the economic director from Code for America come up last week, and we had great meetings. We're working with ACLT, which is
I don't know what that is.
Sorry,
it's Anchorage Community Land Trust.
Anchorage Community Land Trust, Kirk Rose over in Mountain View, and we toured there. And then Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, we're working with them. And then the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, mm-hmm. we're working with them. And we went over to a job service center and just watch people. There's lots of people are looking for jobs, and they're actively doing stuff about it. And we just want to figure out, like, what are some of the challenges? How can we make this easier?
Right.
How can we make this work better? And so we'll be lucky to have people and Mountain View, we just have a lot of resources in terms of data there already.
Mm-hmm.
But we're looking at the job service center. That'll impact all of Anchorage. And we're looking for this to quickly scale to the rest mm-hmm. of Anchorage, mm-hmm. like Muldoon, Spinard, and the whole area. And because we might mess with state systems, Or see if there's ways to improve those, it will help the whole state.
Right. I want to go ahead and welcome a caller on
sure.
On the air. Hi, Patrick. You've got an idea to throw in the mill here. What is it?
I've got actually two ideas, and I haven't found the mayor's office very receptive to either of them. But the first is that there is a management system referred to as the Lean Thinking management system. In government, it's referred to as lean government. And the gains out of changing the way you manage from command and control to lean thinking have been significant. All I've really asked of anyone in the state of Alaska is to go visit Dow. I forget his last name. He's the King County executive. He's been
Dow Constantine.
Constantine. He's outstanding.
So I've never talked with you before, Patrick, but we'd love to have you down to the mayor's office to share your idea.
I've only been trying to do that for the last, since he was elected.
Hmm.
But I'll leave my contact information.
Fantastic.
The second thing is that my other passion is trying to find ways to address childhood-acquired trauma, better known as adverse childhood experiences, and in the workplace, there are plenty of examples of reductions of healthcare costs by some very simple expedients, but it's not something that most executives are cognizant of. Aetna, for example, introduced a mindfulness and meditation program, and the report that I hear comes out of a book by Dr. Martin Seligman, is that they saved an average of $5,000 annually, I think $3,000 in healthcare costs, $2,000 in productivity costs. So oftentimes people don't seem to address the lost productivity when they look at healthcare costs. If you have someone who goes in for major heart surgery, they're gone from you for weeks. And at the same time, you're paying a pretty significant salary for not getting the work done, and you have to cover that some way mm-hmm. or else. But I'd like to leave those two thoughts with
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Patrick.
In talking more.
Thank you. We do leave your contact information off the air before you leave us. But also, I did want to tell you one thing. We're going to deal with adverse childhood events next week on this program.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of new information about how childhood events affect your work life later. You know, there's a lot about that. So
thank you, Patrick. I will definitely look into that.
Yeah. And Yeah.
I just want to say it's not new. It's just new to the municipality or to our audience. I've been aware of the Adverse Childhood Experience Study since 2008 and have tried consistently to bring it to the attention of our public officials. I brought Dr. Vincent Felitti to Anchorage in 2011 and to Juneau just last year. And he spoke to the governor and lieutenant governor. I just feel like it's a way that we can make a huge difference
right.
and get our public officials to understand it. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Patrick. Any other comments on that? I think Patrick's gone, but
In terms of Lean, some of the Code for America, the fellows, they work with Agile, which is basically
a similar idea
where you're going to create a prototype and show it to people, get their feedback, and then make changes. And so rapidly evolve software. So we'll go talk to people, find out what are barriers, what they need, make a prototype, then show it to them, see. They're like, that's kind of close, but I still have a mm-hmm. problem with that. And then make another version and just rinse, repeat until we get something really good.
I think Patrick brings up something that's kind of interesting. When I read about sort of all this innovation in cities, you know, it is sort of taking fast iteration from sort of private industry into the city realm. And that is not a snap of the fingers kind of thing to do, because cities are public entities. They have, you know, rules and regulations and requirements. And we've got an article on our website that you pointed out to me from November of 2016 about why is it so hard to make a city's website or a government website better? Mm-hmm. And it was called Cracking the Code or something like that. And it told the story of some innovators in California that were, I think, Code for America
folks.
Yeah,
they work for Code for America. I actually know three of them in the article.
Really interesting. Really, I mean, they wanted to do social good. They could have done a lot of other things with their skill set, but they really wanted to apply them to cities. And they did make progress, but it was hard. You know, things like that API that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, they could fix one piece of what the interface experience for, I think it was food stamps or some kind of aid.
Yeah, for SNAP, they're working for taking the application from 50 pages and 200 questions down to, like, what are the 10 questions you need to ask to start the process.
To make this an easy experience for people that need that service. And they could do things, but it didn't really work with the computer system. So someone on the other end had to input that manually. Well, that didn't work, you know. So I mean, there's... Cities are not as nimble as industry, for example. They don't have the resources to suddenly get the latest and greatest of everything, right?
Right.
I mean, there's real challenges here. And I know we've been at this for a while with Code for America, and I wonder if we've had any realizations about how to make that work better or, you know.
Well, I mean, I think cities are great. I love Anchorage. Mm-hmm. But you have to serve everyone.
Right.
You have regulations. You have limitations in funding. If you make a mistake, people will beat you up in the media about wasting tax dollars. So it's not like
there's reasons why cities don't leap at the next shiny object.
Right. Yeah. Just the culture is slightly different. If you flame out in a startup, it's almost a badge of honor in Silicon Valley, but that time I started the Anchorage city and then it folded.
Yeah.
You can't really do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, people have tons of creative ideas. They just need a little more permission or help to execute those. And I'm here to like take that great idea and test it, see if it works, and then try to scale it. So,
mm-hmm. And that's what the iTeam is about, really. I mean, it's about a
getting
core small group of people that is that is there to augment change and
yeah.
and to help people implement it. I think every organization has an inertia of its own, and it's moving in a direction. And I don't think that's just special for municipal governments. It's public radio, public news organizations,
right.
And
Congress.
Congress.
Any institution.
Any institution has its own inertia, and I think there's always people inside those institutions that go, "Gosh, I wish we could be a little quicker, better, faster, less expensive." And the I team, I think the heart of that idea is that that's just a little group of people that every day they come to work and that's all they think about, because we do have a bunch of people that come today every day to work at the municipality that don't have that flexibility to focus on that.
Right.
We people expect their trash to be picked up on a certain day, and we do a very good job of that. And they expect when they turn on a faucet for water to come out and flip a switch and a light to turn on.
Yeah.
And we live in a place where those things happen pretty much all the time without interruption.
Mm-hmm.
But we need a couple folks like Brendan who are looking at is there a better way to do any of those things?
Right.
Can we shave a little bit here and gain a lot here?
Right. And I'm so lucky to have that privilege. I mean, I've worked at other jobs where it's like, I know there's a better way to do this in Photoshop, but it would take me 3 hours to learn, but I have to get this done now. Like, we have great Muni employees delivering great services to residents all the time.
No, I'm not trying to suggest.
I was like, if I could take a week off to learn, I know this would save me time overall, but... And I get the luxury to be like, what is that idea? Let's see how it shakes out.
Right. And I think you can flip this around. And this gets to another area I wanted to talk about. You sent me an article, Brendan, about a British group. It's called BIT, but it's...
Behavioral Insights Team.
Which was really fascinating. And the reason I want to bring it up now is partly because people can look at institutions and say, they're so slow, or why aren't they faster? But a lot of the information that I read there has to do with individuals who might do something that helps the city be more efficient, but they have their own habit of doing it their own way, and they don't really want to change.
Right.
And so I found that really fascinating, and I think there were some really telling examples of the way a city approached its residents asking for something. And they were able to test different ways and find ways that people responded to much better. And that led to benefits in the city. Can we talk a little bit about
that?
Because it's easy to say institutions are slow, but we as individuals have our own way of doing business. And part of what a city tries to do is get us to change, to be more efficient.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's January right now, so we've all probably made a lot of resolutions. We, like, want to lose weight. So it's something, I mean, the behavioral insight stuff is you're very upfront. You're like, this is what we want to try to do. We're not trying to manipulate. We're telling you, this is what you're saying you want to do. Let us help you. A prime example is a lot of 401k programs in England. It's just like, just have the employee start that and you have to opt out. So you're just already opted in. So you're going to save money. So it's not like, it's my first day, I'll deal with that 3 weeks from now, and then you take 6 months and don't do it. So, and then other examples are, they found if they did a handwritten note on some of the things for, like, paying a parking ticket, or, like, this is past due, you really need to, they would use the person's name, so it'd be like, Meyer, you really need to open this.
Yeah.
And they had a much higher open rate, and the city got more people paying on time and before, and they didn't have to turn it over to collections, even after the cost of just having people write the handwritten notes. So.
Another example, which we had the DMV on the other day, and they were talking about trying to get people, all this new online capacity that they have. You don't have to go down there and bring a book and wait a couple of hours to renew your license.
But that's so fun.
Yeah, I know. Some people look forward to it. But there was a online license example in what I read, which had to do with the car, sending a card to remind you that you're licensed, but then sort of helping you take the next step, like, when am I going to commit to renewing my license, you know?
Right.
And I'm going to do it online. There was a way to get people's behavior, and they had some enormous increase in people filing online to renew their license, which was a huge cost savings for them.
Right. And it saves time for the residents. They don't have to go down to the DMV.
Yeah.
And it saves time for the city, because you don't have someone having to, if the person can do it online, then that's really helpful.
Right. And you know, eventually people will all be comfortable online, but there's still a chunk of the population that is less comfortable. I mean, I don't do that much online. There's some things I could do online that I don't, partly because credit cards keep being stolen and then I have to go back and, you know, but we'll work out those things. But getting people's behavior to change so that efficiencies can be realized in a city was something I hadn't thought about. Another area that I think is really interesting, because we've seen diversity being an issue on police forces. And so there was an example, I forget whether it was Chattanooga or another city.
Yeah, Chattanooga.
Where they wanted to have the police force look like the people that live in this town, and they were trying to figure out how to bring in a broader spectrum of applicants. And they sent out postcards, you know, that were hitting a couple of notes like service. This is a job of service. This is a job that will have impact in your community. The card that had the biggest return was the from women applicants and folks of color was the challenge of this job. And they you know, you can do these kind of testings and iterations and see what is actually working. That's part of what the city is trying to do, part of what this job is trying to do.
I'm actually working with that group through What Works Cities, and we're going to take a look at if you have some kind of traffic citation. Parking tickets are handled by a different group, but just getting people to pay their traffic citations earlier or online, and we'll just do a small experiment. So it's a low-cost experiment. We might have 3 or 4 messages that we test.
And see which one works best.
See which one works the best, and if there's a higher percentage that's statistically significant, then we'll try to scale that. And these are really low-cost evaluations. We do a lot of stuff with text messages at Code for Anchorage and working with the Muni. We can tweak those messages as well. Like right now, you can text a bus stop number and get real-time information that the Muni already has set up on when that bus is going to arrive.
Right.
And some stuff for SNAP pre-screening and WIC pre-screening. And these are great things that Code for Anchorage has gotten to work with the Muni and Alaska Department of Health and Human Services and Alaska. I get them confused. Anchorage Department of Health and Social Services.
So I'm going to just throw a number out one more time in case there's any lingering questions out there. 550-8433 or an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. One thing I did read about this sort of innovative, you know, Code for America idea that people were thinking about apps and they were developing tons of apps, but, you know, 5 years down the road, out of 121 of them, maybe 10 are still functioning. That might not be a real number, but it raises the issue of sustainability for some of these ideas. It's almost like that California example where they could figure out how to make the interface easier, but then there were more problems downstream with the innovation. And so I'm just trying to get at that question of sustainability and how you think about it.
So I think about it in two ways. One, you can use an existing government interface and just have a different way to access that. We have a way for you to check your SNAP balance, which is food stamps. Mm-hmm. And I was just at Project Homeless Connect before this. And what you do right now is you call in to a phone number and you type in a 16-digit number,
which
is on your EBT card. Then it looks it up, and then a robot tells you what your balance is. What this has done, and it's actually made by one of the people in the New York Times article, and we set it up here in Anchorage, is it calls, types in the number for you, listens to what the robot says, translates that back into text, and sends you a text message back. So you're texting your 16-digit number, which you can just copy the next time you do it, so you don't have to type it in. We have that in Russian, Spanish, and Yupik, and I was working with a woman this morning and showing it to her in Yupik, which was really rewarding because she spoke Yupik and she thought it was really cool that you could actually just do that. And it takes 1 or 2 minutes, but the phone call, you can still call in with the phone call. So we're not changing anything there. It's just an easier way to use existing services, which is kind of like the New York Times magazine article where they're talking about. And then the other thing is really talking to users. There's a weird joke that only computer scientists and drug people talk about their customers as users. but basically just finding out what people like. Go watch someone apply for a job or go to Lexis, like see what some of the challenges
what
are.
What workarounds have they actually invented for themselves that you could eliminate?
Or like, can we get rid of that? So when you find out what people really need from the system, then it helps you develop, that's like called human-centered design, but it's kind of common sense. But mm-hmm. often, I'm guilty of it too, it's much easier to just go with what you think the solution is instead of watching someone do it or do it yourself. And really try to see what the process is and come up with something that people are going to enjoy and work on constantly improving it so that it will be sustainable.
So that was going to loop that back to sustainability. If you've been out shoe leather out there watching how people actually behave or perform or do whatever
right.
you're hoping that they will do, seeing where the barriers are and eliminating them, you're seeing that as a direct boost to sustainability.
The other thing is like do a postcard or do a small mm-hmm. experiment and maybe status quo costs less and makes more sense. So like find out that your great idea, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm such a genius idea, isn't that great an idea, but find
right.
it out really cheaply and find it out in the first, two
yeah.
weeks and then scrap that. Don't
right.
don't extend that out because that's not going to be sustainable if you,
right.
no matter how much money you throw at it.
Right. So, do you ever feel like you don't have enough ideas to innovate with?
Well, I wouldn't have to come up with a single new idea with all the ideas that the Muni employees have or what other cities are doing. Yeah. But I mean, coming up with weird ideas has never been a challenge for me.
We're just short on time.
Yeah.
We're not quite short on time. We still have a little bit, but we're going to welcome Jessica onto Hometown Alaska.
Oh, cool.
She has a question. Go ahead, Jessica.
Hi. So coming from a community perspective, do you look for ideas from community members or is there a way to get involved in something like that if I had ideas?
Well, I did see on the Muni website this innovation form. But again, that's a form. Will people go to the website and do it? What do you think, Meyer?
Yeah. Anchorage Innovates on Muni.org. You can't miss it if you go to the main page. We get recommendations from people, and the Alaska Dispatch had an article on this. It was actually, I thought, kind of interesting. As somebody that looks at these results every week, and there's lots of people that actually look at them. Some weeks we get one, some weeks we get 20 people that write in. When that column was written, we got a surge of
yeah.
several hundred ideas, and they range. I mean,
yeah.
they really range. We had one person really interested in renaming City Hall Kitty Hall, and we had other people who have come up with very interesting and elaborate ideas to rethink how the municipality markets itself very thoughtful commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So we would love to hear that way, but also, the mayor is really receptive to hearing ideas directly.
Yeah.
It is always kind of...
Does he answer his phone?
He doesn't always answer the phone, although I think a lot of people do just call him directly. He does call people back, and he does write people emails or meets with them. I'm mm-hmm. I'm kind of always amazed there's only so much time in the day, and our office is very accessible to people.
Yeah.
If they come up and have an idea, bring
walk
it
in.
To it. I mean, walk in or use Anchorage Innovates.
Yeah.
That's easy, and you can
yeah.
do it on your phone.
Yeah. Jessica, is there some area about this that really piqued your interest?
Well, I teach in the high school, and so there's a lot of ways that I feel like community involvement with high school and city involvement and things. Obviously, that's the school board and district choice, but if there's ways that teachers can support and help or come up with better ideas to help make things work or transition even students
okay.
into government positions.
Jessica, we have to go. You can hear the music.
Send it in. Anchorage Innovates.
Yeah,
please,
Anchorage
Jessica.
Innovates.
So I'd like to thank Brandon Babb, the Chief Innovation Officer at the Muni, and Meyer Hutchinson, the Communications Director. I'll be back as your host for next Hometown Alaska when our topic is finding some hope in the adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, here in Alaska. There's new research. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Eric Bork is our audio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.